Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Got James Petras on the program today. It is always an exceptional program when Jim comes on. There are lots of things that he and I both address. Jim, you see everything that I do. Lately, I've been writing about North Korea. I call it a punching bag, not an aggressor. We know where the problems lie. They don't lie in Pyongyang. They lie in Washington. They always lie in Washington. I've written about Maggie Thatcher. I've written about Obama's new budget. If any of those topics interest you, Jim, let you jump in, and I'd love to hear your comments.
Steve, I want to start on a very significant political event that's taking place this weekend in Venezuela, where the candidate of the Venezuelan Socialist Party, Nicolas Maduro, in the footsteps of deceased President Chavez, is contesting elections with a U.S.-backed right-winger named Capriles. And that election, in which about 80% of the electorate will turn out, will be a decisive victory for the people that support social welfare, full employment, free medical and higher education, that looking for public housing for the great majority of the population, versus the same people that have plundered the continent in the past and are in power in Washington and London and Paris and Berlin today. So I think here in Venezuela, people of color, workers, people looking for a better future will get a decisive victory. We're estimating that the socialists will get close to 56% of the vote. The opposition will get somewhere along the lines of the low 40s, and we'll have a clear-cut alternative to what you've been mentioning here and writing about, a government that's for peace, negotiated settlements, that doesn't invade other countries, that increases its social budget rather than its military budget, doesn't threaten invasions and bombings halfway around the world. That's the kind of election they have in Venezuela this weekend, and very likely the positive forces, the forces for progress and social advancement, will win.
Oh, I agree with you, Jim. I left Venezuela out of the topics that I raised. And again, you've seen my articles. I've certainly written about Venezuela. I put a new article out today, how the corporate media, the scoundrel media, and the right-wing think tanks and politicians out of Washington, other Western capitals, bashing Venezuela's democratic process. I say it very accurately that it shames the sham process in America, where literally people have no say whatsoever. Both parties are two sides of the same coin. America's social contract is being destroyed. Venezuelans get marvelous benefits. It's mandated in the Constitution. There isn't a word in the U.S. Constitution about any social benefits or doing anything for anybody except the nebulous welfare clause that amounts to rhetoric, Jim, as you know, and it's absolutely meaningless in practice.
Well, Steve, I've been in close contact with many Venezuelan observers, experts, people on the scenes, and they tell me that this is not a clean election. They've arrested already 21 officials who've been acting to sabotage the electrical power system. There have been blackouts for 24 hours at a time, trying to undermine people's confidence in the socialist government. We know, too, that the U.S. has been deeply involved in recent months in trying to win over military people to overthrow the government. Two U.S. military attachés were expelled a few months ago, but if you read between the lines of the financial newspapers, they're clearly plotting, they're clearly trying to divide the Army from the Navy, the generals from the enlisted men. So there's a second dimension. The third is there are sections of the opposition while campaigning and claiming their victories. Another section is denying the legitimacy of the election, despite the fact that over 100 observers, international observers from Europe, the United States, and elsewhere, including former President Jimmy Carter, say these are legitimate, honest elections that are even have a higher degree of credibility than the elections in the United States. So we have three-pronged attack now: sabotage, we have infiltration and subversion or attempts at that in among the military, and thirdly, we have now claims that the elections are not legitimate. And I think this is sour grapes. They know they're going to lose, the right wing, and they don't accept the outcome. They will raise the flag that this is an unfair election, despite the fact that they control 75% of the media. They're getting several million dollars from the National Endowment for Democracy and other front groups for the State Department, etc. So it clearly tells us something that the commitment, even to a formal electoral process in the United States, is very, very fragile if it's existing. They support elections only when the two candidates or the three candidates competing are all favorable to Washington's interests. And when you get candidates and parties that are pursuing independent policies that are looking out for the welfare of the people, you get this kind of anti-democratic animus that comes out of Washington and spreads like a cancer throughout the body politic. Fortunately, in Venezuela, the government does have control of part of the media. It can counteract its propaganda. Its police forces are more active than they've been in protecting the power lines. Some of the power lines run over mountains, and that's where the sabotage has been taking place, the cutting of wires. This isn't breakdown, as the opposition claims. They have taken photographs of the cut wires. They've arrested people involved, including members of the electrical companies, who've confessed to being complicit with the opposition, and they've locked them up. I hope they throw the key away. And then you have this kind of crying fraud. Now, the problem that exists is that the people that are supporting the government, the great majority of them, want a peaceful election. But they're not going to stand by and let the right wing run riot. And a few of the more exuberant students took to the streets and tried to cause some chaos, and got a sound thrashing from the working class boys and girls from the local neighborhoods. And I think it's a sign of the times that this is not a government that's going to stand by and let chaos and right-wingers take back their rights. They're ready and able and willing to take on anything the right-wing wants to do. If they want to go by the ballot box, fine. If they want to go out in the streets, they better watch their backsides, because they're likely to get a good, swift thrashing.
Well, Jim, I mentioned the things in my recent articles about what you just addressed. And, of course, Chavez put up with these same kind of things for 14 years. I can remember articles that I wrote several years ago, disruptions of all kind, attempted destabilization, the right wing of Venezuela working with the Bush administration, I'm sure the Obama administration as well. I mean, this stuff, I mean, they're used to it. They're ready for it. I'm sure they're prepared. They're looking for trouble. And they should arrest the people responsible, and they should give them stiff penalties. And the idea that blaming power outages on the ineptitude of the government, where you've got saboteurs cutting the lines, and I don't know how lines are strung. I didn't realize that they went across mountains, but there were lots of opportunities to commit sabotage, and they're taking full advantage. But the Venezuelans, we saw in April 2002, Jim, that the two-day aborted coup, that the Venezuelans simply wouldn't tolerate it. They turned out massively and demanded the end of this coup d'etat government, and they were lucky. Chavez survived. He wasn't killed, and he came back, and he got a second chance.
I think there's a great contrast here, Steve. That is, Venezuela, the government in Venezuela, is organizing an election. And in Washington, they're organizing military threats against another country, Korea in this case, North Korea. And the most absurd things are going on. Kerry's saying that North Korea has no right to have any nuclear weapons. And Washington has a storehouse of nuclear weapons. France has a nuclear weapons. Pakistan, India, Israel have nuclear weapons. What is the criteria for saying that North Korea shouldn't have nuclear weapons when it's surrounded by countries which are threatening openly regime change, that is overthrowing the existing government? That's a problem. That's an issue to be taken up by the people in North Korea. And we have no business dictating their military and security agenda, particularly when we're raising precisely those threats that cause countries to look for military defensive weapons or whatever. And it's a frightening prospect when Washington has so much on its plate domestically, slashing social programs, Social Security, slashing Medicare, slashing veterans' pensions, slashing unemployment payments, child nutrition programs, going around spending billions of dollars encircling a country for no other reason that they don't like the government. It's one of these things that tells you so much about the real values that inform the politicians.
Well, again, so true, Jim. America literally is the only country that considers the entire globe and space communications and the cyber world, everything, its own private space, I mentioned, its own private domain, and it literally runs around the world demanding that other countries accede to its demands. There's no other country that's ever done this in human history. Maybe some wanted to do it, but America is the only one that's been doing it for years and years, and any country that dares act independently outside of America's orbit gets targeted for regime change. It can either be by coup d'etat, assassination, disrupted elections, war when all other methods fail, and Venezuela has definitely been in the target zone. It's the main U.S. adversary because of its independence in the Americas. And of course, you've got Iran, you've got Syria, you've got all the countries that America goes to war with. These are the independent countries that America won't tolerate. And it is absolutely appalling, Jim, because all of this could end up very badly. I honestly don't think there'll be a war on the Korean Peninsula, but mistakes are made. I'm not certain anybody knew World War I would erupt. I mean, one country goes at another country, an ally jumps in on one side, another one on the other side, and before you know it, you've got a world war, 25 million people are dead, an entire generation of youth is destroyed, a World War II. The next one will be the last war, Jim, the last global war, if it ever happens. Who knows? It is very, very possible.
Yes, Steve, and I think the key problem here is, where does it stop? If you attack North Korea, that puts U.S. missiles right across the border from China. Is that the ultimate goal, that Washington cannot tolerate a rising economic power which outcompetes it and develops ties all over Africa and Latin America, and Washington buried in its military spending and its financial swindlers is incapable of rising to meet the economic competition, and it has to resort to military force. Is this the way we're going to adapt to a more pluralistic world? I think this is really what's behind this. I can't imagine that it's simply a bully imposing its will on a small country, impoverished people, and like North Korea. I think the objective is beyond North Korea. It's really dealing with the country which has clearly demonstrated a greater economic competitiveness, displacing the U.S. in Africa today. The latest trade figures that China has $100 billion in trade with Africa, up from just a couple billion dollars a few years ago, and the U.S. is stuck far behind China today in Africa, and that has been displaced previously in Latin America. Particularly, last time I was in Brazil, I was talking with trade ministers in the Brazilian government. They said, well, you know, we got U.S. car manufacturers here, but the Chinese are coming in, and increasingly, that's our market. That's where we're selling our soya, our cattle. That's where we're developing our joint ventures and building infrastructure, etc. And they say, why is the U.S. coming down here always trying to nudge us into new military exercises? Why are they trying to sell us new military hardware all the time? We're really interested in something else here. We're interested in growing and keeping our unemployment below 5%, which is what it is in Brazil. Today, it's about half or a quarter of what it is in the United States. So the future is not in military missions and saber rattling, and they just don't get it in Washington. Neither Republicans nor Democrats, they're in the wrong ballpark.
Boy, are they in the wrong ballpark, Jim. You know, you can keep this dirty game going for a certain amount of time. America has kept it going for decades, but it has to have a bad ending. I mean, America literally makes more enemies than friends. China goes out of its way to make allies. As you say, it approaches countries with foreign investment that helps them. They want to partner with them in projects. China absolutely wants to come out very well in these deals, but the countries that they go into, that they want to partner with, they benefit as well, where America wants to extract its pound of flesh. You mentioned selling weapons and doing the rest of it, and one-way trade deals. And I think Russia wants to do the same thing that China is doing. I mean, countries want to get involved in arrangements like this, but America wants to have it its way. It bullies countries that don't go along. I mean, this simply can't go on forever, and it won't. My only concern is we may end up with a global conflict, and then all bets are off. Heaven help all of us if it happens. And this is because of America. In East Asia, Southeast Asia, Jim, or Northeast Asia, North Korea, I mean, a small country, whether it has nuclear weapons or not, it's small. It's wanted normalized relations with Washington for decades. It's spurned, and the Clinton administration, maybe others, made promises, and they broke them. Why should North Korea or any country trust America? America makes promises and breaks them. So no matter what North Korea does, it simply cannot get a legitimate relationship with Washington, and that's the breakthrough. If it had a legitimate one there, it could have them with every country, Western ones. But Washington bullies the European countries to go along with its way, and North Korea ends up being a punching bag. But Russia and China, they are the main adversaries of America because they're powerful militarily, China especially economically, and Russia, in an article I wrote a number of days ago, a projection for them around the middle of this century is that they'll be the world's sixth largest economy. China will be number one. Brazil, I think, it was projected to be either number number four and number, I think number five. So China, America, Japan, Brazil, Russia, I left one out. But that's the last, I mean, these countries are growing, and America is sinking.
You left out India.
India is the other one.
Yes. Steve, I want to just touch on one other issue that's very big, particularly in the Chicago area, and that is the immigration issue. In particular, this so-called deal that's being cooked up that Obama is peddling as some kind of a breakthrough on immigration. Now, the truth is in the details, and what I've seen, the preliminary drafts of this bargain that Obama's promoting, is that this is a decades-long path which is built upon all sorts of contingencies. For example, that before any immigration law can be implemented regarding a path to citizenship, they have to secure the borders. Now, that's an ambiguous term because there's always going to be some kind of a flow of immigrants. So it's an infinite regression here. As long as they can find immigrants crossing the border, they're going to say, well, we can't open up citizenship because we haven't stopped the new inflow of immigrants. The second thing is the idea that immigrants who've been here 20 years now suddenly have to go back over their tax returns and find out what they did and didn't pay, or what their employers claimed they paid and didn't pay, that's another major obstacle. In other words, the details of this agreement as it's formulated today and as it's secured the approval of the Republicans, Democrats, and the White House and elsewhere has so many formidable obstacles that I don't think 10% of the current candidates for citizenship are going to get it even within a decade.
No, they won't, Jim. They won't, Jim. I wrote one article on immigration in the last month or so on the so-called plan that's circulating in Congress and in the administration. It's a sham. It's an absolute sham. If I were an undocumented immigrant, I mean, all of these people are contributing to the economy. They're working. They're paying taxes. They benefit the economy. They certainly don't harm it. And to target them and to put onerous barriers up, that literally deprives them from citizenship, even under the best conditions. I think, I forget the exact length of time, but something like 10 years or 17 years, a track to citizenship. Who cares about a track that long? So most of them will be scared that they're going to be welched on anyway, and they won't come forward, and the whole plan doesn't amount to anything.
Yes, Steve, and what I think is crucial here is they're carving up the immigrant population. They're going to say, well, we're going to allow a certain quota of vegetable pickers. We're going to allow a certain quota of construction workers. We're going to allow a certain number of fruit pickers and California. And all of this will be on a part-time basis with no promise of any longer presence here. Now, as you know, and as Mexico continues to be in crisis and Central America devastated by the U.S. Wars in that area, people coming in to work, seasonal work, some of them are going to stay. And those people that stay are going to be accused of breaking a contract, and that's going to become an issue of controversy, which is going to raise the whole objections to the immigration program. But first and foremost, all the U.S. is concerned about is serving very particular interests that are looking for cheap labor, and it's nothing to do with citizenship. And what's appalling is the way in which the Democratic Party and those of Mexican or Latin extraction are fronting for this kind of settlement. I'm talking about the Cuban American Rubio. I'm talking about Menendez, the Democrat. They raise these issues because they're looking for a political future with the Latino vote, and they have no interest in really securing safe, prompt an effective road to citizenship.
Oh, absolutely, Jim. And they try to package these plans in deceptive language to make people think they're going to get things they, in fact, never will. Jim, we've got a few minutes left. I'd like your comments. I wrote two articles on Obama's budget, one before it came out and one after it came out. And my article that I sent to you today was called Obama's Neoliberal Budget. And the one before that I called my title, Destroying America. Obama wants social America destroyed. That's what it's all about. I mean, he's in lockstep with Republicans, and you understand this very well.
Yes, we know, Steve, for many years that the Democrats have pretended to be the great upholders of Social Security and Medicare. What the fakery that was going on at the time, nevertheless, despite some very, very reactionary attacks by the Democrats, particularly the Clinton administration, they stepped back from making these attacks. And now we have Obama, the first president since Social Security and since Medicare was implemented, who's publicly taken a position to cut these programs. Now you say, well, it's just cutting the index, the way you measure inflation. But, you know, once you open up the door to saying we can reduce Social Security payments, you open the door to making it a non-viable program. The same thing with Medicare. Once you start increasing the co-payments, once you start chipping away at one aspect of the program, you then turn it into a political football. You turn it into something which is not sacrosanct, which is the centerpiece of the American way of life. You make it just into any other kind of program which can be slashed and burned. And that's the great crime of Obama, is that he's broken that taboo, secondly, and he's opened the door to wholesale gutting of those programs, starting away right now and opening the door in the next few years to doing greater and greater damage.
Well, that's exactly what's happening, and there's no question that Democrats and Republicans are in lockstep on literally turning America into a dystopian backwater, a third world economy, and at the same time waging imperial wars one after another, or multiple ones going on at the same time. And Obama promised to be something different. I repeat the same line all the time, Jim. He's broken every single major promise that he made. He's a liar. He's a serial liar. He betrayed his base, the people who still support him. I saw a poll today that said in recent days, maybe the last week or two, or I guess since his reelection, his approval rating dropped about 6 points, from a little over 50% down to 46 or 47. I just can't imagine how these people are supporting him. I mean, these are the people who are harmed most by his policies, and they simply, they're swayed by the rhetoric, and they don't look at what's going on. They don't blame him for what's happening. I don't know who they blame, the Republicans, the Congress. Congress has a rock-bottom rating, but Obama is very much involved in this, and he literally is harming America's most disadvantaged, the poor, and also the middle class. He's done everything for privileged Americans and corporations, and his budget reflects more of the same. He's targeting Medicare. He's targeting Social Security. He wants them whacked real hard. I think he wants them means-tested. Eventually, he wants them privatized. This is his program, and most Democrats, I feel, go along, and for sure, Republicans do.
Well, that's very true, Steve. And unfortunately, demagoguery is the opium of the masses. But
it sure is.
I still believe over time that people will come to realize what a fraud Obama is, particularly the fact that 75% of retired black people depend primarily on their Social Security.
Absolutely.
They can't keep supporting a president that's slashing the living standards of 75% of African Americans.
I gotta go, Jim. My great, great day.
All right, then. It's good talking to you.
Oh, it's great having you on.
Keep up the excellent work.
Oh, thank you, Jim. Join us tomorrow, Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.